Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Tim Drake talks with Thomas Peters of Catholic Vote about corporate attempts to redefine marriage. You may have heard that corporations such as Starbucks and Target and some others, too, are in the news this week advocating for the redefinition of marriage. So how are Christians responding? We're going to talk about it. Also in our second half, Dan Burke is here. He'll talk with Matthew Archbold about the recent resignation of a Democratic committee woman based on the principles of her Catholic faith. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the Register. Hello again, Tim.
Hello, Tom. It is always good to be with you.
And with Dan Burke, executive director for the Register.
It's great to be with you, Tom and Tim.
Let's begin with Tim this time. Apparently, what some would refer to as the gay lobby has found some fellow travelers from the corporate world to help redefine marriage, right, Tim?
That's right, Tom. And as listeners are aware, the homosexual lobby has been pushing very hard for the redefinition of marriage in several states. They've also gotten several corporations to get on board with their message, including most recently JCPenney's, Target, and Starbucks. And listeners may recognize our guest, Thomas Peters of American Papist. Thomas is a blogger with Catholic Vote, and he's appeared on many radio and television programs nationally. Thomas is joining us to talk about corporate decisions and how Christians should respond to such efforts. Thanks for being with us on Register Radio, Thomas.
Pleasure to be with you this morning.
So, Thomas, first of all, just give us a snapshot of what's happening in the corporate world.
Well, over the last year or so, a lot of gay rights organizations have really stepped up their concerted efforts to get corporations to involve themselves in this cultural war of the definition of marriage. Our response, I think the response of Christians should be that it's not the business of corporations to wade into the definition of the family. That's something for civil society, for people of faith, and ordinary citizens to take up that cause. And so what the other side is trying to do is politicize corporations and get them onto the side of redefining marriage. And we're trying to oppose that and saying that we shouldn't have to decide when we're going to buy a cup of coffee or buy our groceries for the week for supporting a cause we deeply disagree with.
I know that some companies have done more than others. Starbucks, as one example, has gone further than producing same-sex advertising. They have come out publicly and corporately saying that the redefinition of marriage is part of their core values. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, they've doubled down on that. We actually had a Starbucks shareholder go to their recent annual meeting and asked from the floor of the CEO that direct question. He said, yes, absolutely.
And they issued a formal statement to that regard, did they not?
That's right. They also came out publicly in favor of redefining marriage in Washington State, which is where their headquarters are.
Did they also, am I correct in my understanding that they have given some money in a particular state fight? Is that what you're referring to?
They've also filed an amicus brief, for cases trying to strike down the Defense of Marriage Act. So they're investing time and resources in the legal battle to redefine marriage.
It seems rather Orwellian to me that we've come to a point where the government and corporations and others feel that they have the ability to redefine and legislate what a word means.
Yes, it is amazing. Actually, I was looking, there's a story that came out a couple weeks ago. There's actually an online petition now to get Merriam-Webster to change their definition of marriage as well. The power of words in a culture is that they allow us to point to reality. And in as much as redefining marriage to mean no longer the union of husband and wife, but the union of any two consenting adults, that's a way of obscuring reality and defeating what the purpose and the gift of words are. So, there's a cultural fight here. And definitions matter because it's a shared consensus over what the truth of things are.
Yeah, and we also, as we look at words, certainly, that we have those same questions in the abortion fight or many of these moral issues where they seek to redefine terms to make the abnormal seem normal. I want to just remind listeners that you're listening to Register Radio, and we are speaking with Thomas Peters, who works with Catholic Vote, and we are talking about corporate attempts to redefine marriage. Thomas, what do you think it is that motivates these corporations to make such a decision? Can it be reduced to the bottom dollar and the fact that these companies feel that they're going to make more money from the decision than they're going to lose, or is there something else going on here?
Well, I mean, I think on the simplest level, yes, money is involved, and the gay rights community is very powerful and very organized and very vocal. And so corporations, I think a lot of them, I'd say if I had to guess, the majority of them aren't so much passionately in favor of the gay rights movement's agenda as much as they are passionately interested in staying on the right side of culture as they see it. And so the challenge to Christians is to step up and to become similarly organized and vocal about their passionate beliefs, to say that, you know, marriage is good, it is worth protecting, and we will, you know, notice if a corporation sets itself against something as important to us as marriage. There's a lot more of us than there are of them. Certainly Starbucks, take an example, as an international brand. I mean, Starbucks is in countries such as China and the Middle East where same-sex marriage is unthinkable. So, you know, right now I think what's happening is, you know, Starbucks in the United States is getting away with something that they're just relying on the media to not make a big deal of. For instance, in the Middle East, they say that they don't take any political positions. Well, obviously they do, because Starbucks is headquartered in the United States, and we see what they're doing here. It's the media that's allowing Starbucks to kind of talk out of both sides of its mouth.
And how are Christians responding to this, Thomas?
Well, one thing that we started, and I work also for the National Organization for Marriage, was a Dump Starbucks campaign. It's at dumpstarbucks.com. We're approaching 45,000 pledges of people around the world, mostly in America, saying that they're going to dump Starbucks coffee as long as they have this position. So I think it's a very good campaign. It's people have asked me, like, well, if I'm going to dump Starbucks, wouldn't I have to dump, you know, stop going to every business that supports gay marriage? Not necessarily. I think what we have to do is send a message that if you egregiously oppose marriage, if you double down and say that, you know, if you come and drink our coffee, we're going to use those profits and proceeds to redefine marriage and family, then that's something that we just have to take a stand on. And, you know, you go to the website, you can sign the pledge, and that's got also some neat technology behind it where it'll show you in your area where the alternatives to get coffee are besides Starbucks. So I've been Starbucks free now since we launched the boycott. It's a good little act of the will that I've kind of, you know, taken into my daily habit. And I'm saving a couple $100 a year probably. So it's a good thing, and it's a message to the culture. So I'm encouraging people to get involved.
Thomas, this is Tom Price jumping in here. Do you think, if we could go back for just a moment, about what causes a corporation to get away from being morally neutral in their policies? Could it be because there are some people at the very top, like the CEO or the chairman, who has personal reasons for wanting to take the company in that direction?
I think some smaller corporations, yes, get taken in a direction just because their founder or head wants them to go there. I think more often with companies like Starbucks, which are publicly traded, is that interest groups get involved and they, you know, they take shares, and so they can go to the meetings and they start introducing resolutions saying we want, you know, Starbucks to take a position on, you know, marriage or something like that. I think the corporations start to turn when they only hear from one side of the marriage fight. And gay, or, you know, gay activist organizations have been very active in trying to strategically turn corporations, and Christians have largely been silent in response. Now, that's changing. The National Organization for Marriage has a corporate fairness project that has managed to keep many companies neutral. We're still working with Target, obviously, in Minnesota, which is Target's, you know, making some bad choices lately, and they're in a tough spot. But to get back to the idea of a corporate fairness, it is possible. For instance, ExxonMobil, there's been shareholder resolutions over the past 14 years trying to get them to take a very expansive view of LGBT rights and benefits within their corporation, and that's been voted down every year. I think this year actually was voted down by 80%. So it is possible for a corporation to say, no, we will abide by the law of America, we won't discriminate, but we won't positively give in to an agenda and a set of demands from one vocal small part of our shareholder base.
Tell me, for the Dump Starbucks campaign, there is a website that folks can go to. In addition to dumping Starbucks, there are other retail outlets that are part of the Starbucks chain, aren't there?
That's right. I think Seattle's Best Coffee is part of it. If you sign the pledge, you get an email thanking you, and it lists the other sort of subsidiary companies that Starbucks owns. They also just purchased a bakery shop out of San Francisco. Corporations are always very afraid of bad publicity, and if it becomes known, if the media starts to see, like, oh my gosh, 50,000 people, 100,000 people are no longer drinking Starbucks, why is that? And they go into this, you know, I think Starbucks is hoping that not more people know that it's taking this position, which, by the way, a majority of Americans disagree with. So, you know, corporations operate on a thin profit margin. It doesn't take a huge number of people to boycott them for them to, you know, realize that now they're hearing from both sides. Now they're going to go back to the table. It also sends a message to other corporations that are thinking about getting involved in this war over marriage that, well, maybe this isn't only about one side. Maybe there are also Christians who are passionately going to, you know, put their money where their mouth is and walk away from us as regular customers if we start doing things that explicitly offend them.
That's right, and I think just as we wrap up, I think it's also important to point out that in all of the states that have put up so-called same-sex marriage for a vote, that idea has been voted down in every state where it's come up, correct?
That's absolutely right, and actually in Washington State, which just redefined marriage this summer through the legislature, just this week, we turned in a record number of signatures to put marriage on the ballot, and we think we're going to win there in November as well. So, you know, it's absolutely right that we can win the culture, we can win on marriage, and we can also win in this fight to keep corporations neutral. I believe all those three things.
Hey, Thomas, this is Dan. Before we wrap up, I've got a scenario I want to throw out to you to help deal with some folks who might be less motivated to get into these kinds of fights. How do I determine where I spend my money anywhere? Do I poll the gas station owner in my local neighborhood, what he supports, that sort of thing? What is the threshold, Thomas, that Catholics should think about regarding how and why they should really get involved? Because so many corporations are doing so many things that are destructive to our culture. What is it that says, well, no, it does matter in this case. This is why it's so important. You need to get involved.
Well, you know, in the church's social teaching, I believe there's a hierarchy of goods. Some things are more important than other things. Nothing is irrelevant, but some things are more important. Life, family, and therefore marriage, and religious liberty are sort of the core values that civil society needs to protect, from which all other goods flow. And so, in my prudential judgment, corporations that take an egregious stand against the life of the unborn, or, you know, support embryonic stem cell research, or corporations that deeply undermine the family and marriage, or corporations that explicitly set themselves against religious freedom. You know, these are things that Catholics can't afford to ignore because they get at the heart of our human rights and dignity. And they also attack the common good in a structural way. That's the first step. The second step is looking at which corporations are sort of like leading the charge to do this. And Starbucks is a corporation that on the marriage issue is unabashedly attacking the definition of marriage and family and also doing practical things that undermine it in law and culture. So that's where the kind of my calculus goes to. It's not an obligation by any means to do this. You're not a bad Catholic if you don't participate in a boycott. But it's a particular opportunity to witness to the culture and mortify oneself for the kingdom and because it's protecting a good. That's enough, and I think, you know, Catholics, we're seeing a lot with a lot of issues happening right now, with the religious liberty mandate, with all these things. Catholics are called in a special way to show how their lives are distinctive and that their values are not different from the culture, but worth sacrificing for. So something like this, I think, is in that category of a good and worthy thing to do.
Well, Thomas, thank you so much for taking the time from your retreat to be with us on Register Radio.
Thank you very much, Tim, Tom, and Dan.
And before we let you go, Thomas, where can we follow you online?
Sure. Probably CatholicVote.org is where it's hosted now. It's the best place to find my writings.
Sounds great. Thank you again. When we return, Dan Burke is here. He'll be talking with Matt Archbold about what happens when a political party official can't continue because of her Catholic faith. A fascinating story. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
It's fun.
It's free.
It's Wings, EWTN's weekly e-newsletter delivered to your inbox free each week. Read about upcoming special programming.
And learn what's new at EWTN, radio, TV, and internet.
Just send an email to radio@EWTN.com.
Be sure to put Wings in the subject line.
Wings, a free service from your friends at the Global Catholic Network, EWTN.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other. In our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
If it's happening at the Vatican, the United States, or anywhere else in the world, look to EWTN News for live coverage of landmark events in the life of the Church. From today's headlines to compelling interviews with Catholic newsmakers, EWTN News, only on the Global Catholic Network.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And we welcome you back along with Tim Drake and Dan Burke. I'm Tom Price. And Dan, this story is just fascinating to me. What happens when a politician just cannot continue with their work because of their Catholic faith? It sounds like a conscience thing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big issue and it should be. Mm-hmm. I think I've been very encouraged by recent news, some of which Matt has talked about on ncregister.com regarding a specific Democrat that changed her approach to politics. But there's an even bigger wave going on in the U.S. In Mississippi, there's a wave of local state Democrats leaving the party due to the controversy over gay marriage. So I think this is a trigger point for people who maybe held out hope that they could practice and exercise their faith effectively in that party are losing their confidence that that's still possible.
This is kind of a tipping point moment, you're saying?
By God's mercy, I hope it's a tipping point.
Yeah.
Matt is going to tell us a bit about one of those, not from Mississippi, but from another area of the country. Her name is Joanne Nardelli. Matt, welcome to Register Radio again.
Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Doing great. Tell us a little bit about Joanne. What was she doing before she resigned her position? And give us a little background on that.
That's the thing. I mean, talk to the Democratic Party right now, you know, they'll say she was a nothing, she was a nobody. But I can tell you this as a reporter here in Pennsylvania, Joanne Nardelli was a pretty big deal. She was the president and founder of the Blair County Federation of Democratic Women. She was the vice president of the Pennsylvania State Women's Caucus and was first vice president of the Pennsylvania State Federation of Democrat Women. And she was supposed to be the president of that in the next term. So this is a woman who had met with Hillary Clinton. She gave a rosary to Joe Biden and even appeared on the cover of U.S. News and World Report going to church with then-Senate candidate Bob Casey Jr. She was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a passive role to me, Matt, or a minor role.
No,
so she's completely committed to her party and up until recently. What happened? Why did she resign?
Well, she had been one of these Democrats who were Democrats from the time they came out of the womb. The family were Catholic Democrats, and in fact, many in my extended family in New York are still hardcore Catholic Democrats who can't be shaken from that position. But what happened was that she was stunned when she saw Joe Biden, I guess it was a few weeks ago now, say on Meet the Press that he was now for gay marriage. And that really shocked her. And she said she'd always related to Joe Biden because it reminded her of her father and, you know, a real regular guy seeming. So she thought it would die there, but then President Obama piggybacked on that, and it was clearly that this was all politically calculated to leapfrog one on the other. And then shortly after that, she received her agenda from the party espousing that position to, and she said, you know, to agree to this, to agree to fundamentally transform marriage and for her to go out there and talk about this and push this, she said she could not do it. It had finally reached, as you called it, a tipping point, which is, I think, what we're looking at right now. The few days after, she was actually, after she announced that she was leaving the party, her phone was ringing off the hook, and a lot of it was, a lot of hate was coming her way. And it's funny because even the Republicans who were calling to congratulate her, she didn't even know them. So not only has she, you know, renounced her party, essentially her entire social circle is gone as well. So this is a leap that's not just affecting her politics. This is really her life. And one of the impetuses of this move was she met with her pastor concerning this, and they talked it over. Now, both of them have not really talked about what went on in their conversation, but when she came out, she was committed to leaving the party. And one thing Monsignor Anthony Little did tell her, that they said, that he told her, was that this was going to be a really big deal, and she was going to get a lot of criticism for it. And his words, sadly, seem prophetic.
Yeah, I mean, she really made a bold move. This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and I'm talking with Matt Archbold about a story of a Democrat, prominent Democrat, who's basically left the party and her social circles and made a big commitment to reject something that she's been a part of for a long time because of her values and her Catholic faith.
You know, Dan and Matt, this reminds me so much of Abby Johnson, the woman who worked for Planned Parenthood in Texas, realized that what she was doing was wrong, took a stand, quit the company, and then was immediately shunned by just about everybody she knew.
That's a fascinating element, isn't it? Because what it shows with these people is they weren't wooed out, for instance, by participating with people of different beliefs.
Yeah.
They're digging into their own faith and realizing the people that they're being influenced by and influencing are really in a radically different place than they are. So, Matt, let's just dig into this a little bit more. You said in your story she'd always been a Democrat. We've talked about that. But what's really fascinating to me is how is it that a party who's been foundationally, for instance, pro-abortion for more than 30 years, it's been in their platform, I think, formally since 1976, how can they have a perception that they can make a difference? I mean, I love the optimism in a way, but what is that about? You have a Democrat, but primarily Democratic family. Tell me about that mentality.
Yeah, it makes for, weddings and funerals pretty exciting because you end up arguing in corners, you know. But it is a fascinating thing. One aspect of it, I think I always think of it, is when someone finally realizes something, I think the last thing we all want to do is say, hey, what took you so long, you know. But there is a sense, I believe, in the pro-life Democrats, and there are some well-intentioned ones, is that they are making inroads towards making the Democratic Party more accepting of the pro-life position. But when really you take an objective view of this, it's really not a lot is being done. I mean, in 2008, conservative Democrats, so-called, cheered the fact that the Democratic Party, in their platform, put in a sentence that they strongly support a woman's decision to have a child. But this has been 30 years of espousing the right to abort. And finally, in 2008, they say, oh yeah, we support your decision to have a child. And that, to them, was great news. This was a real revolutionary moment. And you can read the articles about it. They treated this as a victory.
Yeah.
And, you know, but so it's a bit like jumping from an airplane with no parachute, hoping that gravity is going to change its mind.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, Matt, and I think it's fair. I mean, let me just say this about Mrs. Nardelli. her resignation is something we should praise her for and encourage her for. So those who stay in and fight, the Lord be with them. We need to encourage them because they should fight. But those who come out, we also have to stand up and say, well, that also makes sense. I don't see a lot of hope on that side of the aisle, but we're Catholics. We're not Republicans or Democrats, and that's how we live out our faith and define our faith, is by our faith, not politics. But, Matt, I wish we had more time to dig into this. I really appreciate you putting this story out there, and thanks for being with us again on Register Radio.
Thank you, Dan. Really appreciate it.
And my thanks as well, Matt. One more thing before we go, Dan, and that's to talk very briefly about the Stand Up for Religious Freedom rallies that took place really all over the United States today. Just a little shout out to our listeners. If you attended one of those and if you took some photos, we would love to post them on our website so you can email them to this address. We are, the letter R, free, 000@gmail.com. I'm going to give you that again. We are, the letter R, free, 000@gmail.com. And we're going to post some of those pictures on EWTN.com. So
that's great.
A good thing indeed. Thank you so much for joining us this week on Register Radio. For Tim Drake, Dan Berg, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.